This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 76. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast to help developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching startups, whether you've built your first one or you're just thinking about it. I'm Mike.
And I'm Rob.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. So what's the word this week, Rob?
Hey, did you notice the change I made to the intro?
A little bit, yes.
Yeah, I just changed it. I feel like we need something that's more broad because I think that in, you know, now that we're 76 episodes in, you look at our listener base and it's not just people launching software products.
Right.
Like it's far from that. So I feel like we'll find a better word for it in the next few weeks.
Yeah, I think it'll just kind of naturally come out. But I see what you're saying. I mean, because there's a lot of people who are asking questions of me that are not necessarily software startup related, or, you know, there are other products, or even, I mean, I think last week we got a question from somebody about asking about physical products.
Yeah, get those now and again. Musicians, there's inventors, there's lawyers, there's CPAs. I mean, there really is, it runs the gamut. So anyways, hey, so yeah, quick update for me. I had this revenue goal for Hittail and it was for February. So it was for 2 months ago. And when I missed that goal, I was, you know, all depressed and disappointed and stuff. And that's when I had my little, it was about three or four episodes when I kind of had the crisis of faith with Hittail and was just talking about revamping it and really coming back to my goals for it and such. Well, I wound up hitting that goal at the end of March, except not exactly. I was actually, no, it's a several thousand dollar goal and I was $20 shy. So it was pretty brutal. And to make matters worse, I noticed there were two refunds that had been delayed that should have gone through in February that came through in March, and they were for $9.95 each. But even with those refunds, I would have been like 26 cents shy.
You should have put up some Google AdSense. You could have at least a dollar.
No, but it really made me realize, I mean, I was talking to someone about it and saying, you know, it's like the goal is a big round number, but like hitting that round number doesn't matter. It's like being $20 shy of it is close enough. So I'm actually quite pleased with doing that, as long as next month goes up from there. I have this weird thing with Hittail because it has annual subscriptions in addition to monthly subscriptions, and that actually makes it kind of a pain. There's some accounting tricks that you're supposed to perform, but they're fairly time consuming. You're supposed to take all the annual stuff, divide it by 12, and spread it out over your revenue over the course of a year, but there's just no way I'm going to do that because it's a manual thing to do at the end of every month. So as a result, I have, so far I've had fairly choppy revenue that'll move up and down by several hundred dollars a month. I want it to always increase, essentially, right? That's the goal. So working on that.
Cool.
How about you?
Well, I'm off this week, so I'm trying to get a bunch of automation systems in place for the year. And I know I'm not going to see the payoff for most of these things for a little while, but it'll definitely kind of contribute to the things that I'm doing this year. One of the things that I started doing this past week also was I outsourced some of the Audit Shark programming. So that'll start to pick up this week and next week. And I know it's going to take some time for the contractor to kind of get up to speed on a lot of the stuff, but I feel comfortable with having him do that because he's the same person who I put in charge of porting my form software over. And having looked at the work that he did, I feel pretty comfortable just kind of handing him this piece and saying, here, go to work on it. And, you know, here's some screencasts to kind of help you get started. And the intent is to have him work on it full time. And I know that I can keep him busy for the foreseeable future on it because there's a lot of little details and stuff that need to be taken care of. So I'm looking forward to kind of getting that process going.
That's crazy. Yeah, this is the first time you've outsourced any audit shark development, right? Because we've talked about this in the past.
Yep.
Well, congrats. Congrats on making the step.
Yeah, so most of the stuff that he's doing is all UI related. I've got all the core stuff done, but the UI stuff, as you know, I mean, anything UI related tends to take a while because you have to get things just right. And there's always these little nuances that you have to deal with. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it though.
That's cool. Yeah, I actually had a kind of a cool thing. I think I'm going to be able to lower my hosting cost. As I've mentioned in the past, like the hosting cost for Hittail is almost $1,000 because of the massive amount of disk space that I need, as well as quite a bit of RAM and stuff. And so my DBA and I, he like pulled an all-nighter and I worked till 2 a.m. one night and we got clearance from our host, from my colo, to basically do a bunch of high intensity work that would really hammer on the SAN. They gave us certain time frame we could do it at a really reduced rate because we get billed based on IOPS, based on IO per second that we hit this SAN. So the more volume I send in a month to the disk, the more I pay. You know, I haven't really gone over in the past, but I was basically archiving like 600 million keywords for people who had canceled. Yeah, it's crazy. And that just hammers things, right? Because it's not just moving data. It's not copying data. It's actually hitting indexes. It's writing to logs, and it's copying from one to another. So I got this very tiny window of like 12 hours on a Sunday, and we basically just hammered away at this thing, and they gave me a big break on the pricing. And so my database went down. It was 300 gigs before. It's right around 80 gigs now. So it feels so much better. Like, all the indexes have been rebuilt. The database is way faster. I'm going to be able to shrink my hard drive space because I have almost a terabyte of SAN, of RAID 10 SAN high-speed disk hard drive space. So it's very expensive. That's why it's $1,000, and it's all cloud-based. So yeah, I'm going to be able to hopefully cut my hosting bill down. I don't know if I'll quite get it in half, but it'll be some, you know, it'll be 30-40% down. And the nice part is that it just goes right to the bottom line. Like, the app's already profitable, so anything that I can cut out of it does improve the profitability. So I'm pretty excited about that. It was a lot of work, but it was something I knew we'd only have to do once. Probably once every few years we'll have to do that. So it's a big project, but I'm stoked that it's done. And actually, the other benefit is I didn't think we'd be able to add non-ASCII character support. So meaning right now we can only support like the Latin languages, but I've had several folks email me. One guy actually has a Chinese website, and it has multiple millions of visits per month, which, since Hittail charges based on the number of visits you get, this guy is a quote-unquote enterprise client for me. Like, he would probably be four figures a month, you know, somewhere between $1,000 and $3,000 a month just for him to use Hittail. And we got Unicode support in. We made him Envar cars over the weekend. So I'm super stoked to start approaching that. We've had cancellations because people, you know, weren't able to use foreign characters, and I'm excited. I feel like there's been kind of a couple breakthroughs right in a row.
That's cool. Did you actually test it with all the non-ASCII characters? Because, I mean, I don't have any foreign language websites to even test something like that on.
Right. Yeah. Luckily, there are some folks in Western Europe who use Hittail still, even though it was kind of jacking some of their stuff up. It was readable. It just wasn't 100%. And so, yeah, I'm actually working with them right now to verify, because I can't read the language, right? I don't know if it looks okay to me, but I want to make sure the right characters are in the right places. So it's not fully tested, but yes, it is. I know that the data structure's there now, and if there's anything messed up, then it's only going to be some code tweaks, which are much easier than trying to change a column from a, you know, one type to another in an 80 million row database. So
that's funny. 80 million row database. That's probably just one table too, isn't it?
That's one table. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So it's a big one.
Yep. Cool. The only other thing I'm doing is wrapping up the MicroConf sponsorships, and I'm hoping to wrap everything up with those this coming week. And there might be one or two that kind of slip in onto the wire, but for the most part, I'm just going to draw the line this Friday and say, that's it. We're kind of done. And then work with the existing sponsors who've signed up to make sure that they're getting the exposure that they want and that they need for the conference, and go from there.
Cool. Yeah, same for me. Most of my stuff starting to wrap up until we get right close to it, you know, when all the last minute stuff has to happen. But picked out the menus this week and just did some other miscellaneous tasks. So it's starting to feel good.
Very cool.
This week we're talking about why it's easy to be great, but hard to be consistent.
That sounds familiar.
And I had a blog post that I wrote with almost the same title. It's basically based on a quote from Steve Martin, and he wrote a book called Born Standing Up. I've talked a little about it on the podcast in the past, but I wanted to talk more about it because A, I wanted to hear your thoughts on it, and B, I just felt like there's more to say on this topic than I said in that blog post. So we'll probably follow a similar outline, but I think this is an important message, and I know that a lot of folks, you know, who may listen to the podcast don't actually read our blogs. I can't remember the last time I've gone to my RSS reader. Do you check RSS anymore?
You know, I used to do a daily export just to make sure that the trend was going up. I used to do like a 30-day rolling average just to make sure that it was going up. And I haven't done that in probably 6 months, maybe eight.
Oh, no. I was wondering if you read blogs via RSS.
No, I haven't read a blog via RSS in years.
Yeah, isn't that funny? So I used to. I mean, this is like, is RSS dead? Question mark. Like, obviously, it's not dead. I still look at my RSS subscribers, you know, at least a couple times a week. I mean, that's kind of a metric I measure and look at, make sure it's increasing. But at some point, I just stopped. Like, I stopped checking my RSS reader, and I look at podcasts more now.
I know what you're saying. I look at FeedBurner as well, just to kind of see what my subscribers look like. But I don't actually read blogs through RSS anymore, and I haven't for a very long time.
That's a trip. So anyways, that's a bit of an aside, but I think that's why I wanted to talk about it on the podcast, is because I know that there are a lot of people who listen to the podcast who probably don't read every post that you and I post. So today's podcast is based on Steve Martin. He wrote a book called Born Standing Up. It's awesome. It's his memoir about from when he was born until he finished stand-up comedy. So it doesn't cover after that, which is all his movies. And yeah, honestly, I mean, this guy is really smart. Like, Steve Martin is very intelligent. He also said that he was not naturally funny, which I think is kind of cool. He basically talks through the story and talks about how he learned to be funny. And so he really had to look at it from a scientific approach. And I listened to the audio version of it, of course, and he narrates it and is very good. But one of the quotes, probably one of my favorites, is he says, "It's easy to be great and it's hard to be consistent." And what he meant by that is there were tons of comedians that he would run into who would have these knockout shows. Like, they'd have one show that was fantastic. They'd kill the crowd. But that person could not duplicate that success. It was easy to be great once, but it was hard to be consistently great. You know, even extrapolating on that, I realized both through Steve Martin's stories, but also through just my own startups and products and the blog and basically anything that I've done as an entrepreneur, that it is easy to be a one-hit wonder. It's easy to get a link from TechCrunch. It's easy to get one post to the top of Hacker News. It's easy to start writing a blog and get to 300 subscribers in a few months. I've seen several people do that recently. It is really hard to stick around for the long haul and to consistently deliver quality material. I basically have three reasons outlined of why it's easy to be great, hard to be consistent. And so the first reason is that there are no big breaks. Something Steve Martin talks about that I thought was fascinating is he said he thought that going on The Tonight Show was his big break. And he thought that from the time he was really little. And when he was finally invited on, he goes on for the first time and he expects this to be it. Like, that once he does this, he's set for life. You know, he's like a career entertainer and it makes his career. And it didn't change a thing. Like, he still went back to his job of doing magic shows and playing the banjo. And, you know, he's kind of just a small-time entertainer. He said after the second time, it didn't change. After the fourth time, he got recognized on the street by one person, but they didn't remember who he was or where they had seen him. And then he said on and on, he kept going back. And after the 10th time, his 10th appearance on The Tonight Show, is when he started to consistently be recognized, but people didn't know who he was still. And it took like 15 or 20 times until his name was actually there. So it's just this incredible story of, like, there is no big breaks. The analogy is The Tonight Show or TechCrunch or Mashable or Hacker News or any of these things. They just don't have the impact that a lot of people from the outside think that they do. Yeah, he would do a stand-up. You know, this is back when Carson did The Tonight Show. Mm-hmm. So they would have them on once, and then it'd be a couple months later they would appear. So this is over the course of a couple years probably that he was on 15 times.
Wow. No, I think that that's dead on. I mean, it takes a lot of exposure to get people to recognize you. That's hard. I mean, most people will see that sort of thing. They'll, you know, even if you're getting an email from somebody, you might recognize the email, you might not. I mean, just this past week, I had somebody email me and say, "Hey, I've heard this name before, but I can't remember who it's from. Can you help me out? Maybe you know it's who it's from." I think it takes a lot of exposure in order for people to recognize who you are. And that kind of falls into, you know, there are no big breaks. I mean, that TechCrunch link is going to get you a little bit of notice, but it's not going to necessarily land you a heck of a lot of business from it, at least not just from that. I mean, you have to have a lot of different sources of where that traffic's coming from, which is why it's so important to not rely just on Google, for example, for all your traffic.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Like, you almost have to have this diversification of traffic. Most successful businesses that I see have some kind of traffic diversification where they don't have more than maybe 80, 85% from any single source, right? So they have at least 20 to 30% from multiple sources. And those are actually the ones that scale the best, right? Because then if you can figure out how three or four different sources scale, you're better off than, like you said, relying solely on Google and then having Google do, you know, they did their Panda 3.3 update about a month ago, and it just wreaked havoc on a lot of folks I know. So reason number two, it's hard to be consistent, is that, and this specifically with startups and, you know, thinking of ideas and launching products, it's that it's easy to think of ideas, but it's really hard to finish them. We all love to sit around and think about ideas. And we all love, even if we're not sitting around, ideas are constantly hitting our minds for new businesses. I have a whole notebook full of them right here. And it's easy to think about them. And it's even really easy to start sketching them out. It's easy to start writing some code if you're a developer. But what's hard is finishing them. And that's when you have to kind of face the music. You have to get people to pay for it. And that's when you have to launch it to the world. And those are the really scary things, right? Those are the things that like put the terror in your heart. Because if they don't work, then you've invested a ton of time into it. And you have to go do something in public, which is typically scary for folks. You know, if you haven't done it a lot, it is something that it's just not a natural thing for us to want to become vulnerable and post this thing you've been working on for several months. Anyways, yeah, so it's easy to start things and it's a lot harder to finish them.
I wonder if that falls into the kind of the same boat as public speaking. I mean, most people would rather be dead than being on stage, which means it's great for the person who's up there because everyone out there would rather be dead than be where he is. You know, it makes me wonder, why is that? And I think that it's because people don't necessarily like to be publicly accountable. You know, they don't want to be the center of attention. I mean, you get people in small groups and stuff. They thrive on that sort of thing. But you put somebody on a stage in front of 100, 200 people, and it's a completely different story. So I wonder if having all that attention drawn on somebody and launching a product is really no different than that, because you're putting yourself out there and people are looking at you and they're looking critically at the things that you do and are evaluating and judging you basically on whatever the product is that you're putting it out there. So I could see how people would push off from that and get to the point where they're about ready to launch and they say, well, no, I'm going to pull back. I don't really feel comfortable putting this out there yet.
Yeah, you know, I think another reason folks don't want to launch, and I think it's that it can finally mean that like your failure is complete. I think since we're all scared of failing, that launching is when, you know, if you tank at that point, then it's kind of an unequivocal, okay, I really have wasted the last 6 months. Whereas if you never launch, then you never get that for sure no. You can almost perpetually push it out and say, well, maybe this thing's still going to work, you know? And I really think that's the wrong way to look at it. I've had a couple friends recently who have launched and it hasn't taken off in the way that they wanted. And you know what they're doing? They're pivoting. You know, that word is so overused now, but I think that gives folks a lot of leeway as entrepreneurs. It's like you don't have to fail anymore. You can pivot. You can pivot to a new market. You can even tweak your idea altogether. But you don't necessarily have to scrap everything you've done. You can, with one friend, he's keeping the domain name because he has great incoming links already. He's working in a similar market. He is going to start building an email list again, and he's going to, you know, redo the product and relaunch it. And it's not going to be, I think it took him 8 months to develop it originally, and it's only going to be 1 to 2 months worth of effort to pivot. But think about in the old days, like I would never have thought of that like 5 or 6 years ago. I would have launched, and if it failed, I would have just tanked it and started a new idea. Whereas now it's like there's much more of a trial and error mindset due to the lean startup that I actually think that's a pretty good way for entrepreneurs to go, because it leaves you an out to where you can launch, you can quote unquote fail, but as long as you learn from that, and then you just change direction, you don't have to lose all the work you've put in so far.
Well said.
Reason number three, it's hard to be consistent, is that even after a lot of folks launch, like Mike and I were just talking about, it can be even worse once you launch, because either you have some success, you get some customers, and now you're trying to market it, you're trying to support it, and you're trying to add features to your product. Or you launch and nothing happens, no one cares, and you have this huge letdown, right? You get depressed, you get bummed that you've spent all this time on it. And so either this has you ramp up in terms of the amount of work you need to put into it. And to this point, you've probably been thinking, man, launch date. Once I get to launch date, I hear this all the time, right? Once I get to launch date, then the work will just decrease dramatically. And then I'll be able to kick back. And that's actually when a lot of the really hard work starts, because now you have paying customers. Now you're dealing with the people factor. You know, everything's great with your startup until those pesky customers get involved. This is when the hard work starts. So
can I quote you on that? The pesky customers?
Yeah, please don't do that. A friend of mine said that to me at one point. It really made sense. It's like, obviously, we love customers. The customer is why we have our businesses. But it is much easier to sit in a basement and write code and write docs and even to do some marketing than it is to deal with actual real-life customers who are paying you money. They add that weird factor, the X factor of some customers are demanding. You will often have to spend a lot of time with them, and other customers are less so, but it really just adds complexity. So the bottom line is that even once you've launched, it's not like you're finished. I mean, that's really when the work starts. I think we've often said that getting to launch is like the halfway mark. And most people don't think about that. And so what happens is someone will launch a startup, they've put all this work into it, and then you know, if it takes off, it's a ton of work. And if it doesn't, it's a letdown. But either way, it really is hard to be consistent past that, right? Because they either have so much work to do or they've been let down that it's just hard to continue investing then another 6 months and to think, wow, I have to start this whole process kind of over again and get this product off the ground.
Part of that is just that you have this idea in your head that you get to launch and your work is going to decrease, and that's not the case. So your expectations are not necessarily in line with reality. And I think that that's probably what disheartens a lot of people, because they get to that point and they, you know, their expectations are just not what reality is and they can't handle it. They don't really know what to do or what to think about it at that point.
Yeah, I think on a side note, I realized how much this applies to kind of everything in life. I have friends who create art, like they paint, and they'll do a really good painting every now and again, but they're not consistent with it. That's okay if it's a hobby, right? It's the same thing with playing guitar. I might have friends who would play guitar and they really wanted to be good at the guitar and they could play one song really well. They wouldn't invest the time to be consistently good at it. And I think another great example is like with bloggers. I've heard this said a lot of people who say, you know, you want to have a popular blog, start your blog in 2005. Implying that like the only reason that you have a popular blog is because it's been around for a long time. And that is not true. It is easier to build a blog audience now than at any time in the past. With Hacker News and Twitter and all these social sharing things, when I started, it took me 6 months to get the 66 RSS subscribers. It took me a year to get to 250 RSS subscribers. Who today would have to spend a year to get to 250? I bet starting a brand new blog, you could get to 250 in about 2 months, maybe less. If you write some stuff that works well on Hacker News and you're writing to that audience, you know? This consistency, this whole theory, it applies across most things you will do in life, whether it's business or, you know, a hobby or anything. If you want to be really good at it, it is going to take consistency.
And part of that comes down to efficiency as well, because as you do things over and over again, you make these little tweaks. I mean, and it's not any different than SEO or anything like that. I mean, you're making these little tweaks that you have to consistently make across all of your sites or, you know, across every page on a website or whatever. And each one provide you with those incremental improvements so that when you add another page, oh yeah, I've got to do this thing that I did before that converted a little bit better or that made people want to stay on the page or read it. And the same thing with blog posts. I mean, you have to continuously add in new content, add in new blog posts. And when you do that, you submit it to all these different websites and, you know, you gain traffic from those. And oh, by the way, I found out there's this other website I can also submit some articles to and they'll be happy to post the link and share it with their audience.
Right. And that makes sense what you're saying about tweaking and constantly, almost like split testing constantly, because that's what comedians do. Steve Martin talks about doing that constantly of just trying jokes and they fail. Right. And this is why you'll see a comedian rise to fame and they have this great act. Chris Rock did this. They have these great acts and they become huge. And then they record it, they release it on CD, and then they can't go back to the bars. They can't start over again. Their next show, they have to write from scratch, write a whole show, and go back to basically to playing the big amphitheaters. Almost all of them fail at that because they don't have the years of trying material, of starting with 2 minutes of crappy material, turning it into 2 minutes of good, then turning it into 5 minutes of good material, which can take months to do. They basically have to just say, well, I guess I'm good enough now to write a 1 or 2 hour show from scratch, and the whole thing's going to be funny. And it just doesn't work that way. Actually, Seinfeld talked about this as well. There's an awesome documentary called The Comedian, and he basically scraps all of his material that he had used for he had kind of one show that he did consistently that was funny, and he scraps it all and he starts over. It's after the Seinfeld show, and he just starts playing to show up at like a New York club and try material on people, and a lot of it bombs. And that's it, right? It's trial and error. That's the same thing we're talking about. Like being an entrepreneur, is there are a lot of parallels to, because they're always trying to improve it.
So given all of that, what are the ways to improve consistency? Because it sounds like, you know, you have to try a bunch of different things and some things are going to work and some things aren't. But, you know, how do you go about making everything better?
Yeah, I think that's kind of the nuts and bolts of this thing, right? It's like, how can we help improve that? And I have three ideas that I want to throw out. The first is that as entrepreneurs, there's this thing we have called the madness. I think Justin Vincent coined that on Texting. You know, when you think of an idea and you're like, man, that is the best idea ever. And you go and right away you like buy a domain name or 5 domain names. And then you start writing code and then you like write a spec and then you put a thing on Odesk. I mean, this is all within an hour. The next day you wake up and you're like, what was I thinking? That idea was terrible. And so you basically have invested some time, invested some money into this idea that was basically just madness taking you over. It used to happen to me a lot more. I feel like I have better control of it now. But that's one way to be really inconsistent, is to think of ideas, jump on them, work on them for a day or a week, and then just lose steam because they aren't actually that good of an idea and you acted too soon. One way to get around that is to basically give yourself a cooling off period. And so the cooling off period, I have a rule for myself that I never spend money on an idea in the first 48 hours of the idea. And typically it's much longer than that. I'll sketch it down in my notebook and then come back to it in a few weeks. But that helps me keep unclouded judgment once I start plunking down money and time, because I really want to use, you know, my money and time to the best of its ability. I think giving yourself a cooling off period is probably a good way to start.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring that up, because that Altieris training website that I came up with, it wasn't something that I just said, oh, I'll go out and buy this domain name or I'll search for this. It was something that I kind of had on my mind for, I don't know, a couple of weeks or a couple of months, and said, you know, it'd be really nice to be able to just record a lot of this stuff once. And I kind of kicked the tires on it a while before I actually got the domain name or even started searching for a domain name for it. And then I just happened to see that AltieristTraining.com was not taken, and you know, it was kind of an instant, okay, yeah, I got to do this and I'll do it right now. And then putting together the website, I was literally just fooling around with some plugins, and I'll be honest, I kind of accidentally launched the product more than anything else, because I was just playing around with some plugins that I wanted to check out and say, you know, how do these things work and can I use them on some of the existing AuditShark stuff that I'm doing. And before I knew it, within a couple of hours, the website was actually done, and I said, wow, this is going to be a lot easier to launch than I thought it would be.
Right. And that's a much better way to do it, is to stretch out that time frame, but be more kind of more confident that the idea is a rational one. It would have been cool to do it while you were all passionate about it and do it in the first 5 hours after you thought about it, but you have the potential to kind of just waste that time.
Yeah, I've done that as well. I think Justin's absolutely right when he calls it the madness. I mean, because you're just not thinking clearly. I mean, you really need to wait a little while and kick the tires on that idea, or run it by some other people, or at least do some market research on it at the very least before you poke your head up and say, wait a second, was this even a good idea?
The second way that I have for improving consistency is to get affirmation early and often. And by this, I don't mean someone telling you your idea is great, but I mean by potential customers telling you your idea is great. Okay, if I could tell you with 100% certainty, if you came to me with an idea for, say, a small software product, and I could tell you with 100% certainty that, Mike, if you go full-time for 6 months or half-time for 6 months and build this and go through all the toiling, but it will succeed absolutely unequivocally, there would be a lot less doubt in your mind, right? It would actually be a lot easier to be consistent, I think. I don't think that we are, as entrepreneurs, are scared of the work. It's not the hard work that scares us. It's the fact that we might be investing hard work into something that's going to fail and that's going to waste our time, and that we're misusing our time and our money and our resources. So if I could tell you for sure, it would be a lot easier trip, right? Much less of a mental battle. While no one can tell you for sure, can we get above 20% certainty? Can we get above 50, 60, 70% certainty? I think we can. And I think the way you do that is by starting to tell customers about it, building a mailing list, starting to do the marketing, seeing how many people you can drive to a site, seeing how many emails you can capture. I mean, this is the problem, right? It's like, if you don't do that in advance, it's not just about having that customer list when you launch so that you get a bunch of revenue. It's actually about fighting the mental battle that we all fight as we spend 6 months in a bedroom trying to write this code. And it really is helping deal with the mental aspect of it. Because if you have 500 people on your list, then you're pretty confident that you're going to be able to sell a few of those, and you're pretty confident that people have an interest in it. This is why I didn't start writing my book until I had 500 or 600 people on the list. This is why you and I didn't start planning a conference until we had several hundred people on a mailing list. These days, I don't do much without talking to a lot of customers, whether it's in person or, you know, via the marketing channels and getting them to sign up for an email list. And there are people like Jason Cohen also did this with WP Engine, WordPress Engine. He said that he had 30 people committed verbally to pay him. And I think he even had a price. It was like 30 people, $50 a month before he invested any real time in the idea, before he started hiring and pursuing the idea. The first step for him was not to build the infrastructure. The first step was finding those customers, because that gave him early affirmation.
Yeah, that's essentially just validating that your idea has legs. And, you know, what Jason did was making sure that he had paying customers. And, you know, you just do the ballpark math on it. And if you get 30 people who are each willing to give you $50 a month, that's $1,500 a month. And if you extrapolate that from, I mean, those are people that he just knows. And those are essentially personal contacts at that point. But if you can take that and say, okay, well, what if I can anonymize this a bit and pitch it to people that I don't know? How far could I grow this? How far could I take it? And those initial customers are essentially just the validation of the idea. And then you can, you know, you grow things from there.
So the third and final way to improve consistency, something we've talked about a lot before, but it's about finding accountability. And it's finding some type of accountability group, startup community, some people who are going to be able to support you as you go through the struggles of launching and who you're going to be able to support. I like doing it in person, if possible. If I lived in a big city, that's definitely what I would do. I'm also in a mastermind group over Skype. But, you know, it doesn't just have to be a mastermind group. It can be something like you can go to a meetup group as long as it meets consistently and it's people who you feel like you can really talk about your idea with. I've actually known a couple guys who found entrepreneurs locally by going on Facebook and searching for tech entrepreneurs in your area. You know, I think with something like this, it's commonly called a mastermind, but I think you really want to keep the group fairly small, like to 3 or 5 people, because as it gets larger than that, you kind of can't share stuff and be vulnerable without being concerned that someone's not going to get what you're saying or not going to understand it. And you get into larger groups and everyone doesn't have the time to kind of talk about what they're doing on their projects. And so you basically want to set up something that meets fairly consistently, somewhere between 1 and 4 times a month. And you want to get 3 other people together on a Skype chat or in person. And you want to be able to talk to them, you know, tell them what you're going through and support them as well. Mike, do you think this can also happen in a larger setting? I mean, I'm thinking like forums, like the Academy forums or something, or do you think that it needs to go beyond that and always be, you know, kind of a private, smaller group?
I don't think that it has to be a smaller group, but I think that the key things to make it actually work are that you, going back to this entire podcast episode, I mean, it has to be consistent. And if you're not consistent about being accountable to people, then you're not going to be consistent in implementing your ideas. And part of that is also the people that you choose to participate in this accountability, whether it's a forum or a Skype chat or whatever, they need to be as serious about it as you are. I mean, you can't have people in there who are just like, oh, well, yeah, I'm serious about this and I want to have an accountability group. And then week after week, they don't do something or they're very inconsistent about actually committing to following through on the things that they say that they're going to.
That's a big part of it. Absolutely. It's that other people have to be as serious as you. That's a big reason I see that groups fall apart, is that you get this varying thing. You get someone who's just starting out and has 10 ideas, and then you get people who are way late in the game, you know, and who are basically already have profitable ideas going. And you really probably can't team those folks up too easily because they're just at such different places. Yeah. So I think, like you said, consistency is a big thing. And I'd also say, I think that, you know, when thinking about the Academy forums versus something like Answers.OnStartups or having a mastermind group, I think it is going to depend on your personality a bit as to what feeds you the most. But I think for the most part, having multiple outlets, I mean, that's what I do these days, right? I'm on the Academy forums. I do frequent a couple other online communities. And then I also have the mastermind, and that's a lot to commit to. I think that as someone who works at home, has no coworkers, and, you know, I don't have a ton of personal contact during the week, that's helpful. And I think for other folks who do, you know, who can tend to feel isolated, that having multiple outlets can also help with consistency. If you have a question or comment, call it into our voicemail number. That's 1-888-801-9690 or email it to us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot. It's used under Creative Commons. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider writing a review in iTunes by searching for Startups. You can subscribe to this podcast in iTunes or via RSS at startupsfortherestofus.com, where you'll also find a transcript of the podcast. Thanks for listening. See you next time.